Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, welcome to another Record Celtic podcast. My name is Daniel Conan. Delighted to be joined by Sports President Michael Gannon. Guys, how are you both?
Afternoon, chaps. Not too bad. As I just said, I've had my ears irrigated this morning, so I can't hear anything. So I might be shouting and bawling, right? If I start shouting on the podcast, you're going to have to turn the volume.
Do you still do that?
Those big cones.
What came out?
What's that?
Brains. What came out?
Not a lot, to be honest with you, but I'd just get my ears all bashed out. But it's a bit kind of there's not even a sound pool right now.
I feel like we've just
spaceman's helmet.
We've just morphed into an episode of Still Game. I feel like, but
my back's a bit sore as well. I must admit. anything else for me?
Well, actually, we're recording this on Wednesday, but I don't know if your the week semi final at the weekend maybe gave you some heart problems. See what I did there, guys. That's a good segue in. Celtic into the Scottish Cup final, but it was anything but easy, Mick. It was a topsy-turvy game. I don't even know where to start. I mean, an amazing game, a brilliant game, but one that, for both sets of fans, wasn't easy to watch.
No, it was good fun, wasn't it? It was a kind of epic kind of contest. High drama all the way. Loads of kind of little subplots. I mean, you had the kind of, at one point, I mean, it was one of those games I was working on live for the Daily Record website, and your kind of match report has about five different intros. I think at one point it was going to be James Forrest, I thought, was going to be the story at one point. I mean, James coming off the bench, scoring within a couple of minutes, the hero. I mean, I think it was his sixth goal in a cup semi-final or final. So for a while, that was the story. Then it was Aberdeen coming back. Getting an extra time, and then you think it's Celtic have done the job. Matt O'Reilly scoring in the extra time. I think that's a done now. That did look it. They looked done. 2-1. The game looked finished for Celtic, and then there's a wee chance for Junior Hoylett, and it seemed to kind of trigger a little bit of nerves at the Celtic backline. Now they got the goal, and the next time again O'Reilly's goal. It's a period of calm that looked like Celtic had done the job. And again, the last 5 minutes, there was a bit of a nervous kind of. Anxiety crept in, and you get Angus McDonald having you know, made a mistake for the equalising goal, pops up with a goal. Then you get the shootout, and you get, I couldn't believe my eyes when Joe Hart, you had Kel Roos getting cramped on the goal line and not moving when it was Aberdeen's penalty kick. I guess was it Ryan Duncan, was it? It was just a nightmare for a boy, waiting. And he misses. Then you get Joe Hart stepping up to win the thing. You think, this is just beyond bonkers. He misses, and then he goes and saves one. It was just one of those afternoons with so many stories and subplots and drama. Great advert for the kind of the game. Enthralling for the neutral in Scotland and beyond. But I'd imagine it being fraught for fans on both sides watching it.
Well, you guys were both goalkeepers, right? Obviously, both are, I imagine, still top of the game, obviously, but you know, I thought I'd throw in Preston just in case. But Fraser, where do you stand in Joe Hart, a goalie like that, tilt-edged penalty for a cup final, taking a spot kick ahead of, the players, the outfield players hadn't taken one a lot of them. What was it, the fourth pen? Fifth pen?
It was the sider. If he scored, then they won.
Exactly.
Well, yeah.
What do you make of a goalie being left to do that?
I'm all for goalies grabbing the spotlight and the headlines. It's no Rene Higuita. Who's the wee Mexican that used to hit free kicks and penalties? 1994 World Cup. Mind the wee
Campos.
That's the one, Jorge Campos.
Aye.
Joe Hart's no Jorge, is he? Look, I love Joe Hart. I think I've said that enough in this podcast. As a goalkeeper and as a person, I think he's absolute first class. And Celtic being lucky to have him. But not overly comfortable with that situation. Such a big penalty. It just sort of veered into the egocentric territory for me, where I'm coming towards the end of his career. I don't know if that's harsh, Mick. Look, the fact he shanked it, I think maybe if he'd scored it, we'd all just be hailing him, patting the back, all the rest of it. And at the end of the day, he saved the skin, he saved the side skin with the save for Killian Phillips. But when you look at the players who were still to step up for Celtic, I think Alistair Johnston, in fact, I've got the notes here for the penalties. Well, Johnston and Tomoki Iwata went after him. So, I mean, should a goalkeeper be going ahead of a midfielder and a right back who apparently has a good delivery with his right foot? I wasn't comfortable with it. Joe Hart's been a fantastic signing and a great ambassador for Celtic and has done a great job between the sticks. But I don't think if the final goes to penalties, I don't think he'll be in the first five takers, that's for sure.
Well, he was saying that, Mike, wasn't he, after the game? He was saying, look, if it comes again, I'll step up.
See, I'm kind of torn. I don't quite agree with Fraz. I mean, I think you're talking about is it maybe ego creeping in, maybe a bit of that, but it might have been this is a guy who wants to take the responsibility and thinks, I'll take that. But, I mean, listen, for a goalkeeper, I think goalkeeping is stressful enough during the game. You get enough pressure on your shoulders for 90 minutes, 120 minutes, because you know that a single mistake can cost you the game. Quite why you want to take more pressure on your shoulders by taking a penalty. The penalty kicks are meant to be a laugh for the goalies. I mean, it's no pressure at all on the goalie. The penalty shout.
That's
tremendous. I mean, it's a brilliant situation for a goalkeeper in a shootout. Because all it can be is good news for you, really. To take that burden off his teammates, I think, is quite commendable. And it's not. Listen, this isn't an indulgence from him. He's done it all his career. I mean, he scored one for England under 21s, I think, on the way to the final of the Euros when he was back in those days. He took one for Shrewsbury, I think. He pinged one. There's one. I think you can find it on YouTube. He pinged one for Man City at the top corner in one of these American tours. So I think it is something he does do, and he does practice them. So I don't think that everyone you speak to in that dressing room has said that. Listen, he rattles him in and train him. So maybe you can understand that he thinks I'm one of the better penalty kicks takers. I'll take the responsibility. It kind of backfired, but he made amends with the save. Just added.
What if they'd gone out, Mick? What if they'd gone out? What would we sitting here saying? What have the fans been saying? Because we left Hampden and Jojo Super Joe was ringing around Hampden, thank goodness. I just fear to think with six games left of his entire career, if Celtic had gone on to lose the shootout, what the Celtic fans might have made of that.
Aye. I mean, I think you're open to questions of why is an outfield player not taking that decisive penalty kick? Why are you indulging the goalkeeper to take one? But like I say, if he's rattling him in and training and you think he's one of the best five takers, then why would you not allow him to take one?
We got to Rodgers after the game. The question was put to him. But mm-hmm. The last thing I said to him was if he wants to do it in the final, which he's already said he does, will you let him take it? And I think the look in Rodgers' face said it all. He refused to say yes or no and just says he would probably need to practice a bit more.
Yeah.
But I think the look in his face said it all. He'll not be stepping up in the first five, that's for sure.
But, I mean, listen, penalty kicks in Celtic this season haven't been going that great. They've missed quite a few this season.
A lot,
I mean, you think going to the shootout, I think the record before was maybe like, was it 6-10 or something like that? It's like not much better than 50% of penalties being scored. I know Palmer missed two after retaking one, didn't he? Kyle Gore missed one. David Turnbull, he's also away now.
Ida missed it, I think, didn't he?
He'd have missed one as well, yeah, that's right. So the penalty kicks have been a bit of a kind of a Kelly Silver Celtic this season, so it was a wee bit kind of a irony that they got through on spot kicks.
It is head over, mind over matter, isn't it, penalties, and look, he's probably the most confident guy in that dressing room, so part of me understands it. It's just the fact.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
He's missed it. I think it's a bad look.
I see knowing the way Scottish football is, it's just so crazy, so topsy-turvy. I've just got this gut feeling the last kick of his entire career there's going to be a penalty in that Scottish Cup final. Just feel like I feel like it's going to happen. Honestly, I know it might not be in the first five. It might go to sudden death. I just feel that's
11th kick, like the 1990 final against Aberdeen, finished 11-10 or something.
Oh, there was that.
It's not Antoine Rogan.
There was that mad Dundee United shootout, wasn't there? Under Gordon Strachan, was it 20?
Yeah, Arthur Boric up against was it Zaluska?
Zaluska.
Yeah, the two Polish goalkeepers. I don't know. Listen, I mean, Joe Hart's a funny character. I mean, I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago and done for a piece, and he was, and I put it to him, this is, it's all set up for a kind of fairy tale kind of ending for him. And he basically said, I don't believe in fairy tales. You need to work to earn everything that comes your way. He's not banking on like the fates intervening and creating a scenario that's going to go out on a high. He's got to go and do it. This is a guy who's did a few bumps in his career as well. He's not had it all plain sailing. So he knows that football can bite you in the backside at any given minute. But yeah, it keeps the kind of storyline rumbling on, doesn't it?
And he's going to
yeah, that funny wry smile on his face that the cameras picked up after he hit the post, and I'd love to know what's going through his head.
The thing about Joe Hart is as well, listen, anytime you speak to him, you get the sense he wants responsibility because he does really care. I mean, we spoke to him after the game as well, and he was touching on certain things about the like you mentioned, the crowd singing his name and all that stuff. He does, he gets quite emotional, and I think he did an event on the Sunday night as well. By all accounts, even with Joe Hart at the stadium, I think he does get quite emotional. I think he's been quite taken aback about how much he's embraced this thing at Celtic, and he's enjoyed it. At a time in his career, it's maybe starting to peter out. He's this kind of 3 years in Scotland, which is really taken to his heart. But I think he loves it. I think he does take responsibility and knows his place in the kind of grand scheme of things at Celtic. I think he'll be a big miss. I think he'll be a big miss for Celtic. I think Celtic were a big miss for him as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a breath of fresh air, Mick, couldn't
he? He's embraced it, totally embraced it. He threw himself in. I mean, listen, we've seen a million ageing stars coming to Scotland and kind of had a look at them, they're topping up their pension, or they think they're going to stroll it and all that stuff, and they kind of go through the motions a wee bit, and then they get found out, and then they toddle off, and again, the list is endless. Mm-hmm. Joe Hart has come up and he's launched himself into it. I mean, he's really has embraced it with every fibre of his being, and it's paid dividends. He's been a very successful Celtic signing. What's he, 5 trophies in the bag in 2 seasons so far, potentially another 2 to come. He'll have earned his place in the club history no matter what happens now. I think he has also really enjoyed it. After a couple of years of maybe thinking his career's on the wane, it's given him a wee kind of lift towards the end. I'm surprised he's chucking it, to be honest with you. We've touched on this before. I think he's had a great season. I think, especially since the turn of the year, I think he's been terrific.
No.
I mean, he's 37 last week as well. Not for a goalkeeper, it's not that old. I mean, it's getting on a bit. I mean, it depends how he feels physically, but he's barely missed a game this season. So he clearly is in good physical condition.
He puts work in to make sure he is, or doesn't he? He must really day in, day out. Yeah. And I think maybe there's a lesson there for Alan McGregor not going out at the very top when they won the league.
Maybe.
Next season would bring for Joe Hart if he maybe is feeling that he's starting to slow down. So maybe
it's
a very intelligent decision to get out of the top.
Yeah, there's also family reasons as well. He's been spent a lot of moving around in recent years and all that stuff, and there's that aspect as well. But in terms of his current form, I mean, I think he's got to be up there with Celtic's, one of the Celtic's Player of the Year. Mm-hmm. I think he's in that kind of bracket. He's been one of the top 3 or 4 players this season. Mm-hmm.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Aye, absolutely. It'll be so difficult to replace in the summer as well. But look, elsewhere across the pitch, obviously conceding 3 goals, not ideal from a Celtic point of view. Against an Aberdeen team coming into the game, had nothing to play for, 9th in the league, blah, blah, blah. I know Aberdeen played well, but Mick, would you think that that's a wee bit of a question mark for Brendan Rodgers? I mean, we obviously have the hotline every day on Record Sport Online. Liam Scales has been taking a lot of stick in the hotline. Don't know what you guys think of that.
It's nothing new. Celtic's defending all seasons, but a bit hear 'em, scare 'em at times, hasn't it?
It's true.
So I hardly think it's a surprise, really. And is it going to change in the next five games? I don't know. I think supporters better be braced for a bumpy ride for the rest of the campaign. But same issues that have perhaps kind of dogged them all season. Set pieces, cross balls, a concern. Liam Scales, Liam Scales is a bit of a kind of roller coaster, isn't he? People were surprised that he got a chance in the side after a few injuries to the new arrivals. Then he played out his skin and did really, really well. Nailed down that starting berth for most of the season. Then comes Mike Navroski and Gustav Lagerbielka, haven't really had a look in all season because of him. Now, in recent weeks, there's a few people asking a few questions again of him. I think maybe a wee bit harshly. I think he's done pretty well. On the main, he's done pretty well this season. Is he better than the two guys I mentioned? I think so. I don't see the two pushing to get in for the remaining games. I think it's now going to be Scales and Cameron Carter-Vickers. If the two are fit, they're playing. Stephen Welsh in there, obviously, can chuck it in the mix as well. But I don't see them dislodging Liam Scales in the next five games. I think he's had a good season, deserves to be in the side. And it's but overall, Celtic need to defend better.
Fraser, Mick mentioned it earlier on the podcast about James Forrest. Brilliant to see him at the weekend come on, and he gave Celtic something that it looked like they badly needed, someone that was going to get to the byline. Nicholas Kuhn looked to me in weeks that he was sort of starting to show signs of why Celtic had paid money for him, but again, disappointing. And I mean, is James Forrest the best winger at Celtic really at the moment?
Good question after the weekend, isn't it? Brendan Rodgers certainly thought so after the game. Seeing the basis of that goal alone, you'd have to say so. You know, he came on the 61st minute, 62nd minute, he cuts in, has a shot that's blocked by a desperate corner Barron challenge. 63rd minute, the exact same move, cuts in, gets by Barron and bends one into the bottom corner. Fantastic. Thought he was excellent, a real injection. That is the perfect substitute's appearance. Gave his whole team a jag and an injection, a kind of pace and a direct running that Celtic were needing, because they had taken control of the game after half time, but still without looking really like they were going to breach that Aberdeen back line. It was going to take something like that goal to get Celtic's noses in front. He's only 32. You know, he's no veteran yet. Not quite a veteran anyway.
He's talked about like he's a lot older, I think. You know, he's only 32.
Ah, just because he's been there so long. What, is he 32 and he's been at Celtic 30 years or something? I think it's the one area where Celtic have badly downgraded. Maybe that's a bit harsh, but you know, they're certainly not the levels they were the last two seasons when Jota and, we're just terrorising defences across the Premiership. Kuhn, as you say, showing flashes of it. Yang, Rodgers seems to like, but a bit of an empty jersey at Hampden at the weekend, I thought. And it took Forrest to come on and give him that real injection. So, I know, to answer your question, I think he's maybe best in that situation for the next six games. Being that sub that can really make the difference when Celtic need it. Whether he can produce the same sort of magic starting a game. He always does it against St Johnston, but they're not playing St Johnston. So, I don't know. I'd be interested to see what Mick thinks in that. He sees more of Celtic than me, but maybe that is the perfect role for James Forrest now, coming off the bench to give his team a jag.
What do you think, Mick?
I think it's a problem positioning for Celtic in the flanks, with Dyson Maeda likely to miss the rest of the season. I think it's a problem because, I mean, Palmer's not quite managed to recapture the form. He had some good spells in the season, but a wee bit hit and miss. Yang, a couple of good games after coming back from the Asian Cup. The red card at Hearts seems to disrupt him, and he's never really come back to form since then. I thought he was not great coming off the bench. Not great at Ibrox. I think obviously culpable for the equalising goal. I can't for life me understand why that wasn't James Forrest getting put on in that position. I think Forrest has got a defensive ability that Yang doesn't possess. Just be experience, he just knows, and big game experience as well. Question mark whether he can last 90 minutes. I think he end up lasting an hour, I think, didn't he, about that? And Saturday, I think he came off to a tactical substitution, which didn't really pay off either. But he was terrific when he came on. It was like I say, he did more than 4 minutes, I think, Yang managed in the kind of previous 50-odd. So I think he's got a huge role to play. I think I'd be tempted to give him an even bigger role to play than he has done of late, because I think he is a big game player, great experience, doesn't get flustered, just gets on with his job. And he gives that insurance defensively and can score a goal and create a goal. For me, I think he's worth his weight in gold. A tremendous servant to the club as well. I mean, I think, again, I think he's another one of these guys that might not get appreciation until he's gone. I mean, he's now won, I think he's got 22 winners, medals in his back pocket, potentially in our couple as well. I mean, incredible. I think he's one away from Billy McNeil's. I mean, I could be wrong, maybe two away, I don't know. But he's not far off anyway. It's unbelievable, really. And then again, look at the big goals and big moments, big semi-final goals. He scored three League Cup finals in a row, I think, as well. Just a big figure. A quiet, unassuming guy. He just does his business. Doesn't want any limelight or any praise. Just gets on with it. A manager's dream. Doesn't go banging doors down if he's not getting a game. Just works hard in training and is ready to go whenever called on. And when called on, more often than not, does the business. So I think, he's a guy that we need in the next five games, without a doubt. Whether it starts or not, I don't know. Maybe from the bench could be handy. I don't know. It depends.
It's almost like a 12th position in these days, isn't it? With so many subs allowed now, is that impact sub? It's every bit as important as any other position, starting position in the park, I think, just in the modern game. They have that sub, you know, you can throw on with a right good chance of changing the game.
Well, that's, I mean, I think the lessons from Ibrox as well. I mean, Celtic are playing against Rangers at Celtic Park, and it's tight, and they've got a lead and all that stuff. I don't think that mistake will get made again. I think that would be sent for Forrest, if not even a start in that game, because, like I say, Maida's a huge loss. Maida's a guy who he infuriates and thrills in equal measure, doesn't he? I mean, he's a guy who he's capable of, I mean, great pace, harassing defenders, creating chances. Also got, I mean, obviously, that's the byline. You're endangering yourself. You're in that stand, you could be getting your wig knocked off. Or he's running through and goal. You certainly wouldn't be putting the mortgage on and putting it away sometimes. but I've said it before in this podcast. If he had that ability, he had that final touch as well, he wouldn't be at Celtic. He'd be 100 million quid in somewhere else, because the rest of the tools he's got in the box are so impressive.
Mick, even knows how to score with a tackle in an Old Firm game. That is ability.
Like that was the most Dyson made a goal ever, wasn't it? Just running down and getting back.
But Tavernier is afraid of Maida. Like, there's something about him. He's got Tavernier's head, it feels like.
Aye.
But obviously he's not going to be playing in the last
Yeah, game. I think he will be relieved that it's not there. I don't know if fear. I think it's like, well, I think he's wary of him. I think what he does is he stops James Tavernier going full pelt up the park, nice, because he knows that in our direction it's dangerous, because Maida's could have him on toast. Mm-hmm. And he does this. He does unsettle him with that kind of chasing down. You see it all the time in these games. He does make him rush his work, and he doesn't like it too much. So he's a huge loss. I mean, I know Ben Rodgers has done his best to try and play it down, but he knows that himself. He's a huge loss for the running, because the guys that have been left behind, like we say, Palmer not quite hitting form, Yang very much hit and miss, and James Forrest, who maybe can't do 90 minutes. So Celtic are a wee bit short in the wide areas at the moment.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Last thing on the game at the weekend, guys. In the striking department, we mentioned Adam Ida earlier on. He obviously came on off the bench, as he kind of does for Kyogo at the moment. We also saw at the other end of the pitch, Boya Miovski. Miovski getting on the score sheet, 24 for the season now. I'm going to put you in the spot. If we assume that only one of them can be signed, and they're both roughly the same price bracket, I don't know, between 4 and 6 million, if you were in Brendan Rodgers' shoes, who would you go for?
Some question. I don't think you can really lose from either. I think they're both very good.
Both strikers, eh?
I think Ida came in under so much pressure when Celtic fans were writing off the transfer window and is this all we're getting, and come up with some massive goals. I don't know if it's been said before. It kind of reminds me a bit of John Hartson when he's running at players with the ball at his feet. He's so powerful. Obviously got a bit more pace to get away from folk. Norwich City Championship. I think he's still got a chunk of his contract left. Is he not 2008 or something?
It's been rumoured, and this is all, you never know, but talk like 5-6 million for him, roughly. It's a lot of money.
I think Aberdeen could hold out for more. Perfectly entitled to hold out for more than that for Miovski. You know, they held out for more for guys like Scott McKenna and Calvin Ramsey, incredibly. See the two of them. If it just came down to ability, I think Miovski's got a touch more in terms of everything. Fantastic finisher, all sorts of finishes. Pace to get away for a defender, power, real agility. And obviously for Aberdeen, that goal return's been fantastic. What a find he's been. Fair play to Jim Goodwin during his era. So I think if it just came down to straight shootout, same money, I think Bojan Miovski offers a touch more. But hey, Adam Ida has been fantastic for Celtic. So either of them would be good signing for me.
Before you go, Mick, before you give us your answer.
Not offence you, Fraz, come on.
Miovski.
Miovski.
And you're also hurting an opponent.
They're
weakening Aberdeen, so that's another reason.
That's true.
You know what, that'll make me popular with Aberdeen fans, won't it? Miovski, just.
We took a vote on the Record Sport Twitter page yesterday. Now, there was 2,000 votes, not a great sample size, but I was quite surprised. 47% went for Miovski.
I'm not overly surprised. No,
sorry, I should quantify it. I've made an error. 47%.
Stop the count.
47% went for Miovski, but there was also neither or Adam Ida, so Miovski was the clear winner.
You get to be Donald Trump's election campaign, you.
I would go with Ida.
I think
Ida's a better option for Celtic. I think he brings a different dimension. I think Miovski's really good, great finisher, but he's not going to start every week ahead of Kyogo while he's still there. And they're a wee bit more similar in terms of their style of play. I think Ida is different. That brings a different dimension to Celtic's play. He's a bit more direct, a bit more power. He's got the pace, can finish. I think he's also a guy who isn't going to be kicking the door down, like I mentioned, to play every week. He's not playing every week. I think he will. He's only 23. He's got more development in him. I think he knows he would get game time at Celtic. But whereas Miovski is international, and I think he wouldn't quite be prepared to sit on the bench for longer spells. I just think that the dynamic of the side, either you know what you're getting, he knows he can handle it. I tend to agree. I think Miovski would do a job most places, to be honest with you. But I just think if you're talking about try before you buy, Ida's done it. He's been here and done it. And I think if they can get him. I think the price could be a factor, both of them. The top dollar for both of them. So it might come into the equation. But still, they aren't short a few bob right enough. So it shouldn't really be an issue. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think I would be tempted to go for Ida than Miovski.
Just to try and redeem myself slightly, we had just over 2,000 votes. Miovski 45%, Ida 37%, not sure 3%, neither 15%.
It's an online vote that says not sure.
That's a complaint,
bonkers.
That's still only
95%. What's the other 5%?
I'm looking at it right now.
How many ballot papers going missing here? Honestly, how many did he count?
I'm going to have to edit this out. This is making me look really bad here. I'm looking at it right now.
It's all good. I can read that.
I think a march on record towers here. I think there's somebody still on the count here. There's definitely some.
Listen,
another fight for Chris Sutton.
Exactly. If this is made it in the final podcast, something's gone really badly wrong.
Well, 45% said Miowski, 37 said Ida, 3% not sure, another 5 who knows what happened to them.
Another 15% was neither.
No, Mick, you're sitting jotting this down, sitting there like you're on Countdown or something, doing the conundrum.
Well, Smith, what's that out?
Honestly, right. All right, so 15%. I said neither of them are okay. Right, that's the missing 15%.
That's it. 20 years ago today, as we're recording, Mick, Celtic beat Boavista to get to a European final. It's going to be a nice way to end today's podcast. What was your memories of that day, that game? Horrible game, obviously brilliant at the end, but to sit through as a Celtic fan was absolutely brutal.
It's just a bit worrying that it's 20 years. I remember being a young
21
years ago. I do remember the kind of the sense that in the first leg that Celtic had put themselves in a bit of a jam, the first leg draw. But they went over there and got the result, and it was at the time it was just huge, because I mean, so long since a Scottish team had got to a European final. It was just, at that point, the momentum and the atmosphere around the club is incredible. And it sparked a kind of mass exodus of people to get to Seville. I remember having pals, and this is showing my age as well, pals that were on the CFAX, the CFAX holidays, looking for deals. I used to get the CFAX holiday, you know, phone numbers and all that stuff, trying to get packages to get yourself to Spain. So it was bonkers. It was, I think I remember fast. I was a young gun myself, my early 20s, young cub reporter. I think I was at the Ruggling Reformer, so we freelance back then. So it's a long time ago, but it was, I think that season in general for Celtic fans will always be held in such high regard. And that run to Seville will linger long in the memory, won't it?
That was the Reformer, no send you for a colour piece.
I couldn't get Cameras Lang for a colour piece those days.
See what Mick was saying there, as we try to get to the game. I always remember my granddad, he's passed away now, but he says about Lisbon, but 1967, him and his mates were chipping in for a minibus, and he's like, look, we're going to go, and they couldn't really afford it, and one of them turned to the other and went, listen, we'll just go next year within the final, which is funny to think back at now. Exactly, I know. But as I was preparing, writing the notes about how that's 21 years ago, I thought to myself, I wrote, you know, when will Celtic next get to a European final? It sounds a bit far-flung, but you look, that Rangers team got to one in 22. Mm-hmm. It's not out of the...
Rangers have been to two since...
Of course.
Yeah. You'd have been football training that night, you know, Faz. I remember leaving my work and then going to training.
I never saw a Boavista game. I watched
the Blackburn and Liverpool games. That was it. I think I was
training, and
half the team were only there.
There's nobody
turned up.
Training cancelled. I definitely didn't watch that game. The only thing I remember is the black and white check strips, Boavista strips. Must have been the paper the next day. No recollection of that one whatsoever.
Let's hope it's another 21 years before Celtic.
Well, they've got to look. If Rangers have done it twice, if Rangers 2 years ago proved that with a special atmosphere, the Europa League is within touching distance for Scottish teams if they can get a bit of momentum. It's not beyond all comprehension like the Champions League is. I don't know. Obviously, the perfect season for Celtic Europe next year would be somehow to get through the Champions League group, but if they're to finish third and drop into Europa League, then you've got a chance, a sniff of a right good crack at getting to a final. Rangers have proved that, as you said, 2 years ago. Why shouldn't Celtic aim for that? That's the beauty of Europe now. You get a second and third bite of the cherry, whether you deserve it or not.
I think the Champions League is just no fun anymore.
It's terrible.
It's genuinely to be endured rather than enjoyed. I mean, I'm sure the guys in the boardrooms are like, oh, take the dosh, and it's there's a certain level of prestige and you get the anthem and all that stuff. But once that's out the way, it's
everything's bad about modern day football. Even when the Scots teams have been punted out, I can't watch the same old games in the last 16 in the quarterfinal. I can't. Same old games every year.
I think you see the Rangers run to the Europa League. You see kind of West Ham in England. I mean, I must admit, I find that's quite amusing. They talk about the English team. They're seeing this year at the Aston Villa as well now. And it's almost like these are kind of like plucky underdogs getting to the final. I mean, you get wage bills about 300 million quid a year.
Yeah.
I mean, West Ham, the plucky underdogs of West Ham, they're like paying guys 150 grand a week.
Villa came to him back in August, and Lee Johnson said straight away, this is a we're now playing the favourites to win the whole competition. And to be fair, it's one of the few times he was right in his Hibs career.
And rightly so, because we've seen the budgets in England are just beyond the vast majority of Europe, apart from the very big super clubs. I mean, the average teams in Germany and Holland and Spain, they're not paying the same as average teams in England. Nowhere near it.
No.
You wonder why they're getting to the last four and finals and all that stuff. It's completely skewered the kind of level, the playing field as well for a lot of clubs. So it's difficult. Even the Europa League and Europa Conference now, it's difficult. Because you could hit one of these teams late on as well, and you have no chance. You have absolutely no chance against them. But yeah, Celtic could do another kind of Seville type run. I think it's been long overdue. I don't think they've won a knockout tie since maybe Barcelona. A couple of years after that. Yeah, so they really could do with some sort of a European run next year. But listen, they're going to have to contend with the next five games in a cup final. Yeah, I think that's the big priority in the short term.
This time next year, guys, we'll be doing this podcast from Monaco or wherever the 2025 Europa League final is. You've heard it here first.
Like Del Boy and Roy, this time next year with Millionaires Boys. This time next year.
Exactly. Guys, as always, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much for listening at home, and we'll be back next week. Cheers.